Here in Genesis 23, you've got this case where Abraham has to buy a piece of land on which to bury his wife. And of course, it's picked up in the New Testament and is quoted as evidence that he did not possess the land in his lifetime, and yet God promised it to him as an eternal inheritance. And so the point is made that we are strangers and pilgrims on the earth, and here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. And so he says, verse 4, I am a stranger and a foreigner living with you. And we're told in Hebrews 11:13, that is quoted, and it's interpreted as meaning that he was looking to a future kingdom. Now this really is our pattern, that we too have been promised the eternal possession of this earth, and yet we don't have it now. But if you do happen to, quote, own, between the commas, a piece of land, that is just for now. We have to see the absurdity of the paradox that this is our land, this is our earth, forever, this is ours. And yet, in this day of small things, people sell us pieces of land. And of course, for most people, the idea of possessing or owning your own bit of land, especially with a building of some sort upon it, that is pretty much the sole end product of life. If you manage to borrow money from a bank and in the course of your working life pay it off, let alone buy a second property, well, you have done extremely well, and people go to their grave planks sort of self-congratulatory that I made it. And of course, many people on this earth get nowhere near that. And yet it's also bizarre because you get that that deed that says, you know, you own this property, but it's only temporary. It's only until you die. You cannot take that with you. And this is the myth of ownership of property. It is an absolute myth because you can only have it for so long. That's why God set the whole system up with Israel to understand that the land was eternally his, and he was, as it were, leasing it to them on a kind of eternal leasehold, but it wasn't theirs, it was his. And so he recognizes this when he says that I am a stranger and a foreigner. And the whole chapter here really emphasizes how he has to go through all the rigmarole, all the ritual of buying a property, and the deeds are made out, and it's clarified the exact dimensions of the territory and the trees on it and all that sort of thing. And verse 15, they say to him, what is a piece of land worth 400 shekels of silver between me and you? Therefore bury your dead. Now that clearly is an invitation to barter. He starts off, the owner starts off at 400, and the idea is, come on, okay, knock me down a bit, but that's what I'm starting. But Abraham just pays the money, and he doesn't respond to the invitation to barter. Now, in the Al-Alaq tablets, they've discovered records of the sale of whole villages in the area from roughly about that time. And a whole village was worth between 100 and 1,000 shekels. And yet, this guy wants 400 shekels for his field. Now, Jeremiah paid 17 shekels for a field in Jeremiah 32, verse 9. 1 Kings 16:24, Omri paid 6,000 shekels for the entire site of Samaria. So we wonder why Abraham just says, oh, okay, 400, that's okay, I'm not going to barter, here you have it. And I think the idea was that he was almost smiling, that, yeah, this is mine forever. You want 400 for a tiny little bit of it? Okay, fine. In other words, he does not have a secularly wise or strong perspective on all this, because he knows that it's his. And the way that they carefully define the exact area of the land and the cave which was in it in verse 17, and all the trees that were in the field that were also seen as valuable, and the deeds are drawn up and all that, the whole idea is almost ironic. The language of borders. Well, he had the whole land from the river of Egypt to the Euphrates. They were his borders. And there they were in their legalistic little way, drawing up this document, or probably written on a tablet, on a stone tablet, that says you can have this if you pay the 400. And verse 18, this is agreed by all who went in at the gate of the city. But God had told him in Genesis 22:18 that the gate of all these people would be in Abraham's power, in the power of his seed. You will possess the gate of your enemies. You will possess the gate of everything in the land. So it almost seems to be all recorded here to highlight, to rub it in, that this is all so incongruous. When it says in verse 20 and often that this property was deeded to Abraham, it's the same word used of God establishing his covenant with Abraham. It's Genesis 17, 7 and 19. So it's all in purposeful contrast. And we mustn't fail to see this. This, the incongruity of our, as it were, possessing a bit of land in this life, when it is ours eternally. And we need to have that perspective, because as I say, it is not for us the general run-of-the-mill way of going on in this world, where the dream is to be the middle-class landowner, that I own my property. I'm not saying don't own property. I mean, it's usually cheaper in the long term to borrow money and buy a property than it is to rent one. That's how it goes in our world. So I'm not against it. I'm just saying, see the incongruity. And realize always that this is our world. This is our land forever and ever.